This is Morning Edition from NHPR. I'm Rick Gantley. Governor Chris Sununu is starting his third term as governor of New Hampshire, and we have him on the phone line right now to talk about some of the challenges facing the state and events this past week in Washington and what he hopes to accomplish in the next 2 years. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to hear you and have you back on again. Thank you for taking some time to talk to us this morning.
Of course.
You know, this week you called rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol, quote, domestic terrorists. You also said that President Trump bore some responsibility for contributing to that violence with its rhetoric. You did stop short of calling for his removal, saying that was up to Congress. But now that the House has voted to impeach President Trump, do you agree with that decision?
In terms of my decision, in terms of my statement, that he had responsibility. His words carry a lot of weight. I think his leadership, our words always carry weight. We have to be careful of that. And obviously, led to folks, coming down Capitol Avenue there and entering what in a situation that just wasn't appropriate. It was beyond not appropriate. It was appalling. We sat there shocked while these individuals, these domestic terrorists, attacked our nation's capital. And it was completely uncalled for. And, of course, the president has to take responsibility in that.
It seems unlikely that the Senate's going to vote on whether to remove the president from office. And they're not going to vote till after Joe Biden is sworn in. But the Senate could also bar President Trump from ever holding public office again. Do you think that's warranted?
I don't think it matters, to be honest. I don't think Donald Trump was president. He's moving on. President Biden's coming in. And I don't suspect Donald Trump is ever going to be president again, either way. So my job as governor is just to focus on everything we got at hand here. And what Congress does with the impeachment, that is really up to them. And governors don't really have any influence or input on that, of course. But and I don't even know if they'll take it up. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Obviously, President-elect Biden will have a lot to say with the Senate about where that goes. But we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, in the next 2 or 3 months, the whole world's going to be very, very different come springtime. If we do our job, we focus on COVID, we focus on the budgets here, we focus on what has to happen. It looks like there could be some relief coming from Washington. That could be a good thing. The bill has a lot of other stuff in it. I think we have to be careful of that. But there clearly is an urgency to get some additional relief to states, and that would be a good thing to allow us all to move on, not just politically, but just practically speaking in our lives.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand that you want to talk about moving on, but there is a division within the Republican Party nationwide. Is it Trump's party? Is it not? So where do you see the Republican Party itself going forward?
Well, it is, no. The Republican Party is never defined by an individual. Not Donald Trump, not Chris Sununu, no one. It's not defined by...
You don't think it hasn't been defined in the last 4 years by Trump?
No. I think the media loves to do that. But look, in New Hampshire, is the Republican Party defined by Donald Trump? No. No, he lost here pretty soundly, but Republicans took back the House and the Senate and won the governorship because at a local level, where politics really matters, where we can have a voice and an influence, I think folks wanted to see that change. And so, no, I think New Hampshire's a great example of why one individual never defines a party, one ideal never defines a party. It's a collective, right, about what we stand for. And as a Republican, I can talk about low taxes and limited government and local control and these fundamentals that I think are very important, that I think that have served New Hampshire very well.
But have those fundamentals been talked about over the last 4 years? I'm wondering if you feel that it is still the same party that it was when Donald Trump took office.
Well, everything is always changing. Is the Democrat Party the same party it was when Obama left? No. No, look, I mean, does Bernie Sanders, do any of those individuals in Washington define the Democrat Party? No, I don't think so. I don't think Joe Biden defines the Democrat Party, and they shouldn't, right? It's about their ideals and their principles and where they want to bring government and that responsibility to the citizens, which is not always 180 degrees away from Republicans. That's the other issue we have. Everything wants to be black or white, right or wrong, agree or disagree. But in the real world, there's a lot of gray area there. There's a lot of compromise. There's a lot of ability to find that common ground. And that in itself defines this idea that we are not strictly stuck to one temporary individual, and they're all temporary. Obama, Trump, Biden, these are temporary leaders. They come in, they do the best they can, and they move on. But the parties are here. The parties may evolve a little bit, but they're going to be here a lot longer than those individuals, a lot longer than Chris Sununu, that's for sure. And so we just have to make sure we don't, I talked about that in my inaugural speech. We don't put one person on a pedestal as the defining factor. We almost treat politicians as some sort of deity right? And they're infallible, right? But it was given this weird cult-like status. But it's not real. That's not real at all.
Yeah, well, I think
so I think we all need to move on from.
Well, I think you are. Ideally, I think obviously you're right. But I think there is a certain segment of the party that has seen Donald Trump as somebody they put on a pedestal.
Sure, but you're always going to get 10% of Republicans that are very extremist.
Okay.
10% of Democrats that can be very extremist, and the rest of us live in the real world. Right? That's just kind of how I put it.
Okay, well, and I do want to move on, and I do want to talk about some of the things that you want to get to in your next term here. But I do something of a more immediate concern is the FBI alert sent out this week to law enforcement agencies in all 50 states, warning of calls for armed protests at state capitals. How is the state prepared for possible protests, you know, here in Concord and elsewhere? And what have you heard from state law enforcement officials?
Yeah, so we take these threats very seriously. Without a doubt, I've talked to other governors to see what they're hearing out there. We have a great communication system with the FBI and folks at the federal level so that the information is there. We are making sure that whatever is going to happen or hopefully not happen over the next week or so where the threats really lie, state police, National Guard, full coordination with our federal partners, we're on alert and we're ready. We're ready. The good news is so far we haven't seen anything so extreme pointed at Concord or the state capitol. But we are going to be over-prepared, if you will, just to double our efforts, make sure we're talking to our friends and neighbors. And it's not just the state house. Other government buildings, other government complexes, we're going to do our best to make sure that we're ready and standing by if anything should happen. So it's something we take very, very seriously. There is this, I think to your earlier point, there's this heightened level of extremism on both sides. And it's unfortunate. We saw it really play out earlier over the summer of 2020. We saw it play out in a political sense down in Washington, which was just absolutely tragic to witness on television. So I think I always say if you want 2021 to be different, if you want it to be better, we have to make it better. But that does take that collective. But on the fringes where there are threats, we're going to be prepared as well.
Do you think we have to be prepared going forward beyond Inauguration Day at some of these buildings?
Sure. Yeah. Look, I think, you know, I don't think we'll ever be at a sense where, oh, you know, the inauguration's done, we're okay now. No, that would be very irresponsible. I think as a culture, as a society, we need things to kind of tamp down with the extremism, tamp down with the over-emotion, and that kind of, I don't even want hyperbole, but that extreme response one way or the other where levers are getting pulled. And so I have confidence that as we come out of COVID, because I think it is related, right, this isolation, these amped-up feelings that we all have through 2020, it doesn't just stop on a dime. We have to come out of it, and we're going to be prepared all the way through.
Are you equating, though, that some of the extremism on both sides, are you equating that extremism?
No, I wouldn't equate it. They're two very different things. Right? What we saw over the summer with the cities burning and all of that and the frustration there is very different than, an insurrection against the government, right? Mm-hmm. But they are both forms of extremism. They are both completely inappropriate and appalling. They're not acceptable anywhere. It has nothing to do with politics. It's just completely unacceptable. It's un-American. But it is something, the response, I guess, is what we were talking about in terms of safety or the National Guard or being prepared for that type of stuff. The response really has to be the same. We have to be prepared for whatever might come.
Yeah, no, I understand that. The state is planning on starting phase 1B of vaccine distribution coming up on the 26th. But many in the state, including those in long-term care and some other frontline healthcare workers, are facing difficulties getting even their first shots. Health providers are worried that they won't have enough staff and resources to vaccinate people efficiently. How's the state going to address those concerns and ensure that those at the highest risk of COVID have access to the vaccine as soon as possible?
Sure. So the state we've actually done very well. I think we're ranked yesterday it was the 12th best state for administering the vaccine in terms of speed. The frustration, which is real, is we're a bit essentially forced into this partnership with CVS to provide all of the long-term care facilities with their first shots. They were a bit behind, about a week behind from their original schedule. We've pushed them and we've gotten them a bit back on board over the last 10 days. So we will meet the schedule of making sure everyone has their first shots by the end of January, second shots coming into February, as was always planned. But it has been a bit frustrating. You know, it's a national effort at the same time, a localized effort, right? So we push, we have our ways to pull some levers, and things are definitely getting better. The good news is as we go into phase 1B, we'll rely less on those federal partners and more on ourselves. And when we rely on our hospitals, our fixed sites, our National Guard, we do it really, really well. That's where we excel. And that's the vast majority of the system that we'll be relying on as we go into this next 300,000 folks that comprise Group 1B. Everybody over 65 just registers, and you can go in and get your vaccine. Anyone with a comorbidity issue, you just if you have other medical issues, you call your doctor, they set up your appointment, you go get your vaccine. And we'll have sites all across the state to do that. So I think as we can move beyond our reliance with the federal partners, the system, as good as it has been, can just get better and better as we ramp up to make sure that we're there for everybody over the next 2 or 3 months in that next phase.
Has the system been as good as it can be, though, with the feds? Or do you feel like it's been a bottleneck at the federal level? Or do you feel it's manpower? What do you feel have been some of the issues with the slow rollout?
Bottleneck at the federal level. I mean, they send us 18,000 vials of vaccine. We don't hold it. We get it all out. We're getting it administered as fast as we can, and we do a pretty darn good job of that. And that's it. So as it comes in, it immediately goes out. If they could give us more, we could get more out. But that's and we make that plea all the time. I was on the phone with Secretary Azar and Vice President Pence and the folks in Washington just saying, look, more and more and more. But every state, it is fair. I'll say this for the federal government. They set up a system that is fair. It is not subjective or political. Every state gets their pro rata share. It's just that it's not being manufactured and distributed as fast as was originally planned. So we take what we can get. We get it out very, very quickly. But if the federal government could speed up, we have a system that could, without a doubt, keep pace, and we'll move it as fast as we get it.
Okay, I know we're limited on time here. I do want to ask this, though. Republicans now have the majority in the State House, the Senate, and the Executive Council. What are the big things that you'd like to accomplish, or maybe things that you'd like to address that you haven't been able to coming up in this next 2-year term?
So the first big thing we'll tackle is the budget. Depending on what might come out of Washington, we do have to work with the budget, create some efficiencies, but we don't need giant cuts to programs or anything like that you might see in other states. I think we're going to do very well on the budget here. I think there's a huge opportunity for student debt assistance. It's a program that costs taxpayer dollars nothing. I couldn't get the deal done with Democrats but I think we can work to get it done. And obviously, I still very much believe that they're to do paid family leave without an income tax. We have a plan. It's been proposed. It was shot down the last 2 years. I'd love to see that move forward in some way. And obviously, just making sure that as we get out of the state of emergency, we're transferring those powers back to the legislature in terms of how to spend any additional dollars that might come in, and making sure that at the same time we still have the flexibility if we should see COVID take another turn, if we should see things get worse, we still need that flexibility to react as well as we did the first time. So a lot of opportunity, but look, New Hampshire's in a great place. We really, really are. Compared to the other New England states, I think we're doing phenomenally well economically. We've managed COVID, but it does take work. It does take management. And I think we just keep our eye on the prize and put our heads down and do our jobs. There's nothing that can't be possible to make 2021 as good as we all want it to be.
I do want to ask you quickly about housing. It's been a big problem for New Hampshire, the pandemic exacerbating that, ensuring enough affordable housing in particular to keep people here, to bring people to the state. Do you have any ideas to address that this session?
Yeah, so we have over $200 million in housing relief coming from the federal government. It hasn't been made clear to us how exactly we can and cannot spend that. So we're still waiting from the federal guidance, but that's going to open a huge opportunity there. And then allowing those dollars to go to the local level and allowing the local, whether it be Manchester or Portsmouth or Berlin, figuring out how to spend those dollars, because the needs are always a little bit different in each of those areas. So getting the money out, giving them, the local communities, the flexibility to design their own path to meet the challenges in homeless and housing needs within those communities is going to be, I think, a vital piece of that puzzle.
All right, we have to leave it there. Governor Sununu, thank you so much for the time.
You bet. Thank you, sir.